And we are on lesson number 7. And of course, one of the challenges is not just the amount of material in some of these lessons, but also the danger, if we want to use that strong a term, of stepping on material in future lessons. Our author does, we have said as we talked about the book of Proverbs, that the first 9 chapters of Proverbs is a discourse on wisdom. We finished up those first 9 chapters last Sunday. And we talked about how that it talks about wisdom, the source of wisdom, the value of wisdom, the benefits of wisdom, the effects of wisdom, warnings about immorality and things that would draw us away from God's ways and God's paths and the wisdom that God has given to us. And so it's a beautiful discourse. Those chapters should just be read over and over again, as well as all the Proverbs, of course. But those chapters are just really very beautiful and amazing and need to be absorbed by us regularly. But as we get to chapter 10, we have talked about, we get to more individual proverbs. Different ones have tried at times to try to see organization here or outline here, but most of those attempts have been proven to be futile. There's clearly some places, and we'll see that in our lesson today, where there's a grouping of maybe 2 or 3 or 4 verses on one particular subject. But generally, it just seems to go from one subject to another, oftentimes without any rhyme or reason necessarily that we can see, at least that I can see. But our author has attempted to, as you look forward in the lessons, to group some ideas. And so, for example, in this lesson, he talks about enduring success, wisdom's way of doing business. So he focuses on some things like diligence in business. Next week, Brother Brent will talk about introspection. The wise heart knows itself. So introspection. Well, we can guarantee there's more in those chapters than just that idea, but he focuses on that. The next week, the words we speak, the mirror of our heart, the words we speak. Well, as you read through the chapters today, there's a lot of things in these chapters about the words we speak. And so, and you can read on down through there some of the different ways he's kind of focused different lessons on different things. But as we see, because some of these things like the mouth and laziness, the sluggard and different topics are scattered throughout all of these. And so what I started to say was the other challenge is not getting ahead of ourselves too much and talking too much about things that we will be talking more about. But with that statement, I'm not going to worry about it too much because it's almost impossible. But he talks here about righteousness. And in the introduction of the lesson, he talks about God's way of righteousness. In that introduction, he points out Psalm 119, verse 172. All your commandments are righteousness. And he says on verse 27 there in the introduction that the righteous are mentioned 20 times in our text. I have no idea where he gets that number. Because in my Bible, it's a lot more than that. I'm not sure if he's talking about one particular Hebrew word. He doesn't specify. But in my double-checking of his numbers, in these 4 chapters, he says, in our text, the righteousness is mentioned 20 times in our text. I'm assuming he's talking about these 4 chapters of this lesson. But in these 4 chapters of this lesson, I find the word righteous or righteousness 43 times. So it's a lot more than just 20 times that he mentioned. Now, it is kind of interesting, though, as I was thinking about that and thinking about the focus of these chapters, what's kind of interesting to me is the word righteous is only found 84 times in all of Proverbs. So you think about that, the word righteous found 84 times in Proverbs. I didn't check righteousness, so it's probably more than that. But that's getting pretty close to half the number of times that word is used in the whole book as in these four chapters. So there is clearly, it seems to be, and I'm not a scholar of Proverbs by any means, but there's clearly some reason that the author included a lot of Proverbs in this section on the idea of the righteous or righteousness. And certainly wisdom and righteousness go hand in glove, don't they? They're two sides of the same coin. And so wisdom, the wisdom from God, the righteousness from God, the righteous life that comes out of that wisdom. We've talked about, as we said, the benefits of wisdom. Our author said that the righteous are those who listen and are obedient to the word of God. And that's right. The righteous are those who listen. That's how we get and attain unto God's righteousness, is by listening. And we've seen that concept, of course, over and over and over again in the Proverbs, the first nine chapters. Listen, my son, listen, my son, listen, my son. And so heeding and listening to God's instructions, heeding, listening to the instructions of the Father, and the righteousness that only God can, the truth that only God can give to us. And so this righteousness, this right way of living, the benefits, we've talked about the benefits of wisdom and of listening to wisdom, and we've talked about how the physical health and the mental health and the material prosperity and all of this goes along with wisdom, by listening to wisdom, as the son listens to the father about how to deal with electricity. He's going to live longer. He's going to have a more prosperous life. He's going to lose less fingers in his work if he listens to the father giving him wise instructions about the handling of tools and electricity and all the things that a father passes along to a son. And so there's physical benefits in life, listening to the wisdom of those who are around about us. And so some of that is certainly in evidence and talked about in Proverbs, as he talks about wisdom. Well, the sluggard, if you work hard, then you're going to have bread. If you plow your fields in the winter, you're going to have bread. Proverbs like that that talk about the physical benefits of the wisdom, but also the spiritual benefits, of course, as we think about the peace and the contentment and the unity among God's brethren and having a purpose in life and happiness and all the things that we also see in this book. And so as we look at these chapters, and again, open your lesson book and just notice chapter lesson number 7, these four chapters, at the 10,000 foot level. He titles chapter 10, and as we said, there's much more, and there's many more topics in chapter 10 than just this. But he puts a title on it here in his outline of this lesson, Dedicated Commitment with an Everlasting Foundation, in chapter 10. In chapter 11, Qualities That Ensure Success, again in dealing with business, Grace and Mercy and Generosity. In chapter 12, Diligence Is Man's Precious Possession, several passages in there about being diligent. Chapter 13, Identifying and Obtaining True Wealth. And so understanding the perspective, having a perspective of what true wealth is and what life is really all about. And so I'm going to go back through the chapters and just point out a few things that I noticed. And then I want to, if you want to, and I didn't give this assignment, but I'm going to, again, at kind of a 10,000-foot level, just point out a few points in chapters 10, 11, and 12 in particular. I doubt that I'll get to 13. But 10, 11, and 12 in particular, some things I want to bring out. But then when I get done, if there are things in the chapter you want to bring out, I want you to, if something in your study happened to catch your eye that you want to bring out that I don't bring out, and I'm sure there will be I want to leave time at the end of each chapter setting for that as well. So, with that in mind, the benefits, chapter 10, I'm just going to focus on some of the benefits of the righteous life. Verse 2, ill-gotten gains do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. And so the benefit of life, righteousness delivers from death. Again, that could be physical death, the deliverance from, as we said, dangers or things in this life because we are wise enough, we are righteous, and we listen. Certainly it is true spiritually. Verses 3, 4, and 5, kind of our group of verses together. And we have mentioned that he does that. We'll see the same in 11 through 14 and 19 through 21, that there seems to be a topic there that is grouped. In verses 3, 4, and 5, it's the topic of, well, let's just read it together. I'm reading from the New American Standard today. The Lord will not allow the righteous to hunger. He will reject the cravings of the wicked. Poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a son who acts wisely, but he that sleepeth in the harvest is a son who acts shamefully. So how do those three verses tie together?
Hard work.
Yeah, hard work and diligence. They deal with one, he says, the Lord will allow the righteous to hunger. How does God keep the righteous from getting hungry? Well, we could think of two ways. One would be the righteous man does what? He listens to instruction. He listens to wisdom, right? And so the righteous man is going to get a job. He's going to do what God says. He's going to plow his fields. And so the righteous man listening to wisdom will not go hungry. But also we see passages like Psalm 37, 25. Someone flip over to Psalm 37, 25 for me. And Matthew 6, verse 33 says, seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Verses like this remind us of God's providence and God's care. God didn't promise us that he'd make us wealthy. He didn't promise that he would make us millionaires. But God has promised to provide. And so on both ends, whether the physical end or talking about God's providence, we have those promises. What is Psalm 37, 25? Chuck, you got that?
Yes. I have been young, now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread.
Okay, so God, in passages like this, has promised to provide for us. Again, it doesn't mean we'll always have as much as the Joneses next door. I guess I should say the Smiths, since we have Joneses here. I don't want to. But God has promised to provide, and so all the so verse 4: poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. And he who gathers in summer is a son who acts wisely. He who sleeps in the harvest—that's not smart, is it? Sleeping at harvest, you get up and get your work done. Bring in the crops, get them in the barn. Then you can sleep during the winter when it's cold. Except in Florida, you have to plant strawberries in the wintertime. But you know, this is the principle, okay? And so the benefits of a righteous life, provisions. Verse 7, the memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. Another blessing, benefit of the righteous life is people are going to remember you positively. They're going to write nice things on your grave marker. Well, they're going to do that anyway, probably, because you know, you ever seen a grave marker where it talks about how lousy someone is? I mean, people die and you go to the funeral and it could be the worst guy in the whole world, but you go to the funeral, it sounds like a saint. So when people die, they're very nice to them. But the memory is something else. And the memory of the righteous, the memory of the righteous is blessed. Verses 11 through 14, we said, is another group. It has to do with the tongue. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. What do you think that means? The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life.
What is that? What is that? Positive things.
Yeah, Yeah. Do you ever been around someone that it just feels good to be around them? They're always saying good things to encourage you and help you and pat you on the back whether you deserve it or not and encourage you, or you get a lot of line, they can pull you back in a way that makes you realize they love and care about you and don't hate you. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. It gives encouragement and comfort and edification and strength. And even when they have to rebuke, they do it in a way that shows their love for you. But the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. Hatred, verse 12, stirs up strife, but love covers all transgressions. Do we have anything else like that in the Bible? Love covers all transgressions. Love covers a multitude of sins. It's paraphrasing the New Testament a couple places, isn't it? And so, love covers all transgressions. Love forgives. It doesn't mean we overlook sin. Hatred stirs up strife. You do something wrong and step out of line, someone just naps at you and yells at you. And then that's just going to stir up strife. But you step out of line and do something wrong, And someone loves you and points it out, but helps you and encourages you, love covers a multitude of sins. Verse 13, on the lips of the discerning wisdom is found, but the rod of the back for him that lacks understanding. Wise men store up wisdom, but the mouth of the foolish, ruin is at hand. And so all four of these verses have to do with the mouth and the tongue and the blessing, the benefit of a righteous tongue. We're going to say more about the tongue, obviously, in this other lessons. But in this chapter, I've been trying to highlight the benefits of the righteous life, and part of the righteous life is a righteous tongue. Verse 16, the wages of the righteous life. The wages of the righteous is life. The income of the wicked is punishment. And so the wages of the righteous is life. The outcome, the benefit, the wages that you receive from the righteous is good things. Honest labor brings blessings. And so he's pointing that there would be a spiritual side to that too. But again, we see both sides of that coin is true. The righteous life brings blessings, prosperity, hard work, a love of others, others coming to the rescue when the famine wipes you out. But the wages of a righteous life the wages of righteousness is life, but the income of the wicked is punishment. Again, the tongue in verses 19, 20, and 21. We won't read those, but again, it fits in the same things that have been said. Skip down to verse 28 through 30. Let's go to 28 through 30. The hope of the righteous is gladness, but the expectation of the wicked perishes. The way of the Lord is a stronghold to the upright, the ruin to the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be shaken, but the wicked will not dwell in the land. And so in these verses, we see a couple of ideas. One is gladness. The hope of the righteous is gladness. The hope is the idea. Gladness is realized. Gladness comes to pass. Joys in this life comes from righteousness. The way of the Lord is a stronghold. That's the ones on the sign. I put that on the sign out front. I like that one. The way of the Lord is a stronghold to the upright. Any other words there besides stronghold in your versions?
Strength.
Any other words? Anyone have fortress? No? Okay. I didn't know. I didn't see it anywhere, but I didn't really look. Fortress is some stronghold and fortress or strong tower or sometimes words that are used interchangeably in the poetry, the wisdom and poetry books. But the Lord is a stronghold. He's a strong tower. He is like a strong wall protecting the righteous, but ruin to the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be shaken. So, in summary, the benefits in this chapter I summarized as provisions, blessings, a good reputation, the help of others, life, happiness and contentment, gladness, stability, and eternal blessings. That's some of the benefits of righteousness pointed out in this chapter. Okay, that's my summary of chapter 10, just a few points. Anybody else have something in chapter 10 they'd like to bring out? Something that caught their eye that they want to share?
Wilson.
Bonnie?
Not that it necessarily caught my eye, but my thought process when we were talking about that the diligence and working hard, you know, gives you, supplies you with what you need. And yet, God never promised us, you know, that we wouldn't have. I mean, there are Christians that have lived in famine.
Yes.
There are, you know, good people, followers of the Lord who have been poor, and, you know, so it's not like if you are righteous, it's guaranteed that you're going to have an easy life.
That's right. That's right. That's right. There's no guarantee about that, is there? And we do see many places in the world where Christians don't have much. That's what's so wrong with the health and wealth gospel that has been preached in our country, without getting off on that. But there is no promise and guarantee that we're going to be rich or wealthy because we're righteous or seeking to follow God and do His will. That's certainly true. Many have suffered. Look at how Paul suffered and went without at times. In Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, he talks about that and talks about at times being hungry and all those things. So that's right. But God provided, didn't He? God provided. Okay. Other thoughts before we go to chapter 11? In chapter 11, the author, I think, mentions some qualities that ensure success. Qualities that ensure success. And again, let me just read through some verses to point out some things that I found. Verse 1, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. Fairness in business. Is a quality of the successful. Even today, people appreciate someone who is fair in business, don't they? And often being fair in business brings even more business. People think they have to cheat to get ahead. The truth of the matter is, when you're fair with people and you're honest with people, you'll get more repeat business than if you rip people off. Verse 2, when pride comes, then comes dishonor, but with the humble is wisdom. Humility is a quality of success. Verse 3, integrity. The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the crookedness of the treacherous will destroy them. And so integrity is a quality of success. Verse 9, with his mouth the godless man destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge the righteous will be delivered. Knowledge delivers a man. We've seen that over and over again. That's a quality of being successful. Verse 16, a gracious woman attains honor, and ruthless men attain riches. A gracious woman attains honor. That's kind of an interesting one, the way it contrasts those two things there. A gracious woman versus a ruthless man. A ruthless man may attain to riches. Sometimes ruthlessness works, doesn't it? But a gracious woman attains honor. And so through graciousness comes honor. A merciful man, verse 17. The merciful man does himself good, but the cruel man does himself harm. So the merciful man, I think of the Good Samaritan. Think of the Good Samaritan showing kindness and mercy and dealing with others. That is a quality of the successful. When you think about people round about you, you think about those who are kind and who are merciful. And all of these things can add up to being a success in one's business. Verse 18, the wicked earns deceptive wages, but he who sows righteousness gets a true reward. A righteousness brings a reward. Verses 23 to 26 is another a grouping of four verses that deal with generosity. Generosity is another quality that brings success. The desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. There is one who scatters and yet increases all the more. And there is one who withholds what is justly due and yet results only in want. The generous man will be prosperous. He who waters will himself be watered. Speaking of water, did you see the sod when we came in? Doesn't it look pretty? Okay, that's just a side. He who withholds grains, the people will curse, but blessings will be on the head of him who sells it. That seems to refer, that's kind of an interesting one. He who withholds grain, the people will curse, but the blessings on the head of he who sells it. According to one of the commentaries that I was reading, it was a common practice, I guess it still is, people holding on to things, not being willing to sell them until there becomes a scarcity of it. And when there was a scarcity of it, what happens if there's a scarcity of something?
Price goes
way up. And so instead of, you know, he's almost creating a scarcity by withholding. The man who withholds just to get the price up, the people will curse. But blessings on the man who's willing to sell and be fair. So all these verses have to do with generosity. The generous man will be prosperous. He who waters will himself be watered. What does that mean? He who waters will himself be watered.
If you are kind to your neighbor, you get kindness back.
Or yeah.
If you work hard, you get rewarded for that.
Yeah, think of George Bailey. Think of George Bailey. Has anyone not seen that movie? Has anyone not seen A Wonderful Life? You need to go home and watch it. What's wrong with you, girl?
I don't watch movies.
Oh. So what happened to George Bailey? So what first of all, why was George Bailey so loved by the town? Because he did everything he could to help people, didn't he? He made loans to people to build up their houses, and he was always going the extra mile. They got short on their money. He gave them forgiveness until they could catch up again, And so the town loved George Bailey. And so what happened when, I even forget the name of Potter. Potter took advantage and stole his money. And now the bank was going to go bankrupt. What did the people do? They came out of the woodwork giving him money. He who waters will himself be watered. He who blesses others and uses what he has and is kind to others, when he gets in a pinch, someone's going to take care of him. So this paragraph has to do with generosity. 27, he who diligently seeks good seeks favor. Diligence. We're going to see more about diligence in a moment. And 28, trusting in the Lord. He who trusts in his riches will fail. But the righteous, the contrast of trusting in riches is the one who trusts in God. The righteous, the one who trusts in God, will flourish like a green leaf. Okay? So, again, summary of chapter 11. Qualities that ensure success. Fairness, humility, integrity, knowledge, graciousness, mercy, generosity, diligence, trusting in the Lord. That'd make a good sermon right there, wouldn't it? So, good. Now, anybody else pick up something in 11 you want to share? Go ahead, Susan, yes.
I like verse 22. I always told my daughter when she was younger, it doesn't matter how beautiful you are on the inside. On the outside. If your heart is wrong on the inside, it shines when your heart shines.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We have to teach children that principle, don't we? It doesn't matter how beautiful we are on the outside. It's what's on the inside that counts. As a ring of gold in a... that one's pretty descriptive, isn't it? As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, the New American says, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. You ever known of a beautiful woman that lacked discretion? Just go to Hollywood. You'll find a bunch of them. Beautiful women that don't know how to act. I don't mean act in movies. I mean act in their character. Okay, so that's exactly right. Exactly right. Others? Other thoughts anybody has?
The fruit of the righteous is the tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. Verse 30.
Yes. Yes. It's a great verse too, isn't it? The fruit of righteousness is a tree of life. Fruit of righteousness is a tree of life. And he who wins souls is wise. You think about the fruit of righteousness that comes and the benefit that is to others. Tree of life to yourself, but a tree of life to others. The spreading of that blessing. The fruit of righteousness is a tree of life, and he who is wise wins souls. Good, that's a great verse. Anybody else want to share one? Yeah.
7. When a wicked man dies, hope perishes, and the expectation of power comes to nothing.
Okay.
Again, nothing in this world is, it's all vanity, right? As Solomon said.
Yeah.
And so you should be looking towards the spiritual and not the physical.
That's exactly right. So when the wicked man dies, mine says his expectation will perish. Why is that? Because all of his hopes are based where?
In this world.
You can't take it with you, can you? You brought nothing. Paul says in Timothy, you brought nothing into the world. You're not going to take anything out. All of his hopes that he had, all the buildings he was going to build, all the things that he was going to accomplish, when the wicked man dies, his expectation dies with it. Because it's all here. It's all about this life. But, and the hope of the strong man perishes. Those are two ways of saying the same thing. Sometimes, we didn't talk about the parallelism, but in the Proverbs, in the Psalms and the Proverbs, they have the poetic parallelism. And sometimes the first line, the second line supplements the first line. Sometimes it's a contrast to the first line. They have different patterns. This one is the hope of the strong man perishes. It's another way of just saying the wicked man and his expectations will perish. Isn't that right? Is that right? Am I reading that correctly? Good. Good. Well, chapter 12. Diligence is man's precious possession. And so, diligence. There's a few passages in this chapter on diligence. It's interesting. It's not necessarily about diligence, but one of the verses, two of the verses that caught my eye were verse 3 and verse 12, where it talks about the root of the righteous. The root of the righteous. Because we see other illustrations and proverbs dealing with vegetation. We might say the tree and things such as that. And here, but it's the root. A man will not be established by wickedness, but the root of the righteous will not be moved. What do you think that means? Now, just I said there's another verse, verse 12. So compare it. The wicked man desires the booty of evil men. The wicked man desires the booty of evil men, but the root of the righteous yields fruit. The root of the righteous yields fruit. And so what's this idea of the root of the righteous, Mary?
I'm thinking that they're saying that the root of the righteous is buried, it's deep in the ground, it draws the nutrients, and the opposite is for the other.
Okay, so if the root of a tree is buried deeply, in verse 3, if we change the word to say, but the root of the oak tree will not be moved, We understand that the roots go down and it holds, except the exception of the oak tree that fell in our front yard a few years ago because the sod and dirt got so wet that it just blew. Anyway, but under normal conditions, a tree with strong roots goes deep into the ground, and you're not going to push it over, are you? The roots will not be moved. The tree will not be moved. And so the root of the righteous man, who loves God and is seeking God and knowledge and integrity and all these things we've talked about, and his roots are firmly established in the ground, he's not going to be moved.
My translation has a reference to chapter 10, verse 25, which is similar to that. When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's similar to that.
Yeah.
The root.
Yeah, I've got that foundation root. When the whirlwind passes by, when the storm passes by, the righteous aren't going to be moved, are they? Mary, Becky, go ahead.
We refer to this too because we talk about someone being grounded.
Yeah.
It says be grounded in the truth.
Yeah.
I think that's the same idea.
Yeah.
Is you have deep roots and you're firm and you're secure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Ephesians 3:17, being rooted and grounded in love. We're rooted and grounded, should be rooted and grounded in love. And so, very good. Okay, so there. That's. I thought that was interesting verses. Yes, ma'am.
Can you explain number 9?
Verse 9 of chapter
12?
Probably not, but I'll see.
What are your thoughts on that?
Better is he who is lightly esteemed in that one. Okay, mine says, better is he who is lightly esteemed and has a servant than he who honors himself and lacks bread. Okay, class? I'll let the class answer for it since I have no idea. Well, I do have an idea, but anyone want to pontificate on that one? I'm not sure about the honoring himself part, but the better is he who, I think the idea generally is the one who is lightly esteemed. You don't think much of that person, maybe, but he has a servant to help him, a servant to help him work. And so because he has a servant that helps him work, he has bread and his crops grow and those things. But he who honors himself and lacks bread, it's better to be not as well thought of as others and yet be solid in your work and what you're doing than someone who is highly thought of but has not used his time and his tools wisely, and so therefore he doesn't have anything to eat. It goes back, there's many times where the Proverbs talks about a person's reputation. It's more important to have the reputation of God and the glory of God and the reputation of righteousness than to be highly thought of by the world. And yet, in reality, be either in poverty or be wicked or those kind of things which are not going to last. Seems to be the flavor. Anyone want to share on that more? Chuck?
Just a possibility on the latter part of that. Mine says, he who honors himself. Maybe he's so arrogant that he can't get the servant to help him.
Okay. Yeah, maybe so. That may be, that's a good thought. Becky?
Well, it says he honors himself. In other words, his honor doesn't come from what other people think of him. It comes because he's building up himself or the other man.
Right.
Even though he may not be held enough, you know, it says he's slightly esteemed or whatever, but at least his honor comes from his way of life and what he's doing, where the other man, his honor comes because he brags on himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Good. Let's talk about diligence just for a moment before we run out of time. Verse 14, verse 11 of chapter 12. Verse 11, he who tills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who pursues worthless things lacks sense. I think that was pretty clear. But it has to do again with diligence. He who tills the land, he who works hard and is diligent. Verse 14, a man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his words, and the deeds of a man will return to him. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his words, and the deeds of a man's hands will return to him. The deeds of his hands will return to him. Verse 15, the way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. Now that doesn't speak to diligence specifically, but it does indirectly as we think about the wise son who listens to the father, and then therefore he works hard and does what he should be doing. Verse 24, the hands of the diligent will rule, but the slack hand will be put to forced labor. And verse 27, a lazy man does not roast his prey, but the precious possession of a man is diligence. So all of these speak to a man's diligence and his hard work and how that will pay off for him. The New Testament teaches this same idea of diligence. And as Christians, we need to remember that the Lord is going to reward diligence. Diligence in Bible study, diligence in our work. Someone, let's just read a few passages. Ephesians 4, verse 3. Ephesians 4, verse 3. Casey, if you will, turn to Ephesians 4, 3. Mary to 1 Timothy 4, 15. Bonnie to 2 Timothy 2, 15. Chuck to Hebrews 4, 11. And maybe that'll be enough. Everyone else turn to 2 Peter chapter 1. Okay, Ephesians 4 and verse 3.
Endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace.
Okay, endeavoring, my version says giving diligence. Giving diligence to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Is peace among brethren something that always comes easy? No, we have to give diligence. We have to love and care for one another and overlook little slights and things like that. And so this passage is teaching diligence and having unity together. 1 Timothy 4, verse 15.
Meditate upon these things. Give thyself wholly to them that are profiting, that thy profiting may appear to all.
Okay, again, my version says, be diligent in these things. Being diligent in the things. Of course, he has a whole list. We just studied this recently of things for Timothy to do and to work on and to improve not only himself, but to teach the brethren. And so be diligent in these things. We have to work hard. We have to be diligent. 2 Timothy 2:15.
Give diligence to present yourself approved by God, a workman who doesn't need to be ashamed, properly handling the word of truth.
Okay, giving diligence again in our study of God's word. Hebrews 4:11.
Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience.
And so he's using, who is he using as an example here, Chuck? Israel. Israel's failure to enter into that rest. Israel, a whole generation, failed to enter into the rest, to enter the promised land. Because of their, well, so many things of their griping and murmuring, complaining, and lack of faith in God. And so let's not make that same mistake. Israel's given to us an example over and over and over again. History, God used the history of Israel to remind us to be diligent and to be faithful. And don't fall like Israel did. But keep pressing ahead. And the passage, we won't turn to read it, but in 2 Peter chapter 1, in that whole section, twice he uses the idea of diligence, giving diligence to add to your faith, moral excellence and knowledge and self-control and all these things, these fruits we're to add. Give diligence. Let's learn from the Israelites. Let us learn from these passages in Proverbs. The diligent hand will be successful with God's blessings. And the same is true for us spiritually. We must be diligent. We must keep working. We must keep studying. We must keep improving. We must keep doing what God wants us to do to serve one another. Okay, we got everything in those four chapters covered.